This is Dave Doggett, and you're listening to the Maritime Outdoorsman Podcast, Episode 15. All right, so I've got Mike Crosby on the line on Skype with me here. And Mike, thanks for taking some time out to join me today.
David, thank you, sir. Always a pleasure to join you.
Excellent. So you and I have known each other for quite a while now, and in fact, I think my father bought my first fly fishing rod from your shop many years ago. But I just wanted to bring you in because, you know, you're well known in the fly fishing, sport fishing world, definitely in Atlantic Canada, and I'm sure beyond. You've helped me in many ways with fishing, and I just wanted to bring you in because, you know, there's a whole big area with fly fishing and what we can do and the opportunities we have here in Atlantic Canada, and ultimately we'll get to talking about where you go during the summer months and what you're doing, and maybe some people can take advantage of that, but. So how did you initially become interested in fly fishing?
Yeah, you know, Dave, it was first an interest in fishing in general. And I was fortunate enough to have somebody when I was very young to start taking my fishing. It was actually my grandmother. Although I think I was fishing a few times with my dad, most of the time I was fishing with my grandmother. And you know what? She used to drag me out at 4 years old and out in all the lakes around Halifax that all have houses built on them now. And I don't know what it was, but I distinctly remember. I remember very well. I was out in a place called Black Point Lake, and I don't know if somebody had given me a fly rod for Christmas or whether I had borrowed one, but I remember at a really, really young age being out in the boat with her at a secret place that she had on this lake, and I was casting and casting out the fly, and gee whiz, didn't a trout come and grab it? And I mean, that was, well, I'm 61 now, so that had to be like 55 years ago, and I still remember it, much like the day I caught my first salmon when I was 16 years old. And again, there's certain things that get etched in your mind, and me, it happens to be fish. And so it just kind of evolved from spin fishing, and it became fly fishing. And then it became fly tying, and then it became fly fishing for salmon, and then it became an addiction, and here we are today.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how we can remember, I can remember a lot of the moments exactly when and where I was and the sensations when I caught certain fish or had certain experiences, but yet, you know, maybe when your wife asks you, did you remember something, it's a little bit difficult.
Well, you know what? I run into that all the time with my kids. They say, Dad, you remember this or you remember that? And boy, I'll tell you what, I don't, or my brothers, they'll remember stuff from when we were kids. And I remember very little of it. But boy, if you asked me about a fish, for some reason that those things all stick in my mind. I don't understand it, but they do.
Exactly. So were you kind of a natural to fly fishing? I mean, the fly casting? Because I know when I first became involved, that was, I didn't start off fly fishing. Like most people, I started off with a spinning rod and reel, or spin casting rod and reel, whatever it is. And there was, you know, a lot of people find it very intimidating to pick up a fly rod because it's not as straightforward. There is a significant learning curve to it. You know, I didn't have any issue with looking like, you know, an idiot on the river and not knowing what I was doing. In fact, I remember the first year or two I salmon fished, I was in rubber boots and I got some funny looks. But what was your experience like when you first attempted fly fishing or fly casting?
Well, you know what? I don't remember.
Oh.
And we just talked about that.
That's right.
I don't remember going through a learning curve with it, although I'm sure there must have been. And you know, casting is really my advice to people today. If they were going to take up the sport of fly fishing, would be to go out and get some lessons. There's numbers of people out there today that give lessons. I don't, because I don't consider myself good enough at it to be given lessons. Some people would argue with that, but I'd say, hey, look, fly casting, learning to fly cast is not a difficult thing if you know what your, you know, hands are supposed to be doing at the right time and the motions that you're supposed to be going through. You can learn it. Really, you can learn to be a pretty proficient fly caster in an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Learning how to catch fish on a fly rod, that's a lifetime experience, and that's why, you know, that's why it is what it is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, in fact, I've had Lewis on the show before, and I'll probably have him on again talking about fly casting. He's one of the people out there that are teaching fly casting. And it's not, you know, teaching it is not for everybody, even though, like you say yourself, you may not think you're the world's greatest fly caster, but odds are you're pretty good, or you probably wouldn't catch as many fish as you do. So what would be your most memorable fly fishing experience? I have a feeling I probably know what this is, but let's bring the listeners up to speed. And actually, I don't mind hearing the story again.
No. I mean, the most memorable thing, Dave, and you're right when you say you probably know what it is the day that I was fortunate enough to catch a very large Atlantic salmon, one that they believe to be or could have been the largest Atlantic salmon ever caught in North America. We'll never know whether it was or not because I released the fish, but from all the photographs and all of the different things, the people that looked at it and the scientists that looked at it and everything else, it was an enormous fish. It's etched in my memory. And, you know, strangely enough, that was on August the 23rd, 1988. So, you know, this year is coming up on 28 years ago that I caught the fish. Last year, several of my friends were fishing at exactly the same lodge that I caught that fish at, you know, where I was fishing when I caught that fish. And I actually, the same fella who was with me, the guy that was with me that day, was still working at the camp, and they put him on the phone, and he and I had a conversation. We talked about that day and what we remembered of it and stuff. So, you know what? It's a long time ago. I've relived it many times, and told it in, you know, many, you know, I've told it to lot, told the story to lots of people and certainly written about it in my book. And, but that would stand out as one of the days that I remember best. There's, fortunately enough, if you've been at it long enough and you go long enough, you'll get all kinds of different stories and things that you'll remember. But if you had to pick one, that would be the one that would be etched out best in my mind.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember seeing the picture. Does that picture still hang in the tackle shop?
You know what? I'm not sure if there's a picture in the tackle shop or not. And at one point in time, I had a wood carving made of that fish.
Mm-hmm.
It was made by a gentleman, Jean-Paul Dubé, who was a very famous guide on the Gaspé coast of Quebec. And that wood carving now is hanging over one of the fireplaces at Camp Bonaventure on the Bonaventure River out on the Gaspé coast. So the actual wood carving I had made is up in Camp Bonaventure. Now I'm having another one made now, which I've been on a waiting list for 6 or 7 years now, waiting to get another carving done, and I'm hoping to have it before the end of this year. But the original one is up there.
Awesome. So, yeah, we'll never know how big it actually was or how much it would have weighed, but what's the best speculation that you've heard?
Well, the best speculation I heard relates to a story, and that's when I came back from being on the rest of Bush River that day, or that trip. I came back to the city, and I had, you know, back then we had actual film and camera, so I had taken photographs of the fish. When I had them on, I took photographs of them. When we had to bring them in the boat to untangle them to release them, I took photographs when we were releasing. So I had these photographs, and I went to this, back then, there was one of these one-hour photo labs, and I went and I sat there and waited for them to produce the pictures. And when I got them and looked at them, I said, oh, my heavens, you know, it's as big as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sometimes you think your mind is tricking you. Anyways, once I had the photographs, I called Jim Gourlay from Eastern Woods and Waters magazine to ask him if he would be interested in a story about a big fish, and he was. But I also called the biologist from the Department of Fisheries here in Halifax and asked them if they had a way to calculate the weight of a fish based on its length, because we had a pretty good idea of the measure, the length of the fish, and they told me that they could, and I identified it was from the Restigouche River. They had a model from that river, and when I gave them the length of the fish, which we estimate to be 63 inches, so 5'3". I mean, it's like a person. But anyway, once I gave them that measurement, the fellow told me that he would do some calculations and call me back, and I just hung up the phone, and it rang again, and it was the guy calling me back. He said, "Are you sure that the fish was that long?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure the fish was that long." And their initial estimate that they came up with based on purely the length and the fact that it came from the restigouche was 84 pounds. And I said, "Well, you know what? I said, I have no idea. 84 is a lot." Mm-hmm. They asked me then if I was, you know, if I had photographs. I said I did, and could I come down to their office? So I came down. I went down to the Department of Fisheries office. It was downtown at the time. I'm not sure where it is now. And I went into the office, and I will tell you this. Did I ever cause a lot of interest? There was people poring over those photographs, and what they eventually did is, because it was a male and because his head was so long, what they did is they overlaid a female body over top of the fish to try and come up with a length of what would normalize it. And in the long and short of it, they finally gave up and said, "You know what? Your fish weighs well over 60 pounds. We just don't know how much." Mm-hmm. And we'll never know. So, you know what? Best guesstimate is 60 plus pounds, 63 inches long. And heavens knows exactly how big it really was, but it was huge for sure.
It's massive. I can still see the picture right now, even though I'm not looking at it. So it was basically the length was derived from the photos and your guys' account based on the ribs in the boat, something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. We had the fish laying on the bottom of the boat. We were able to look at the number of the ribs, and then I called back up to the camp and had somebody went and go and measure them. So, mm-hmm. You know what? There's a chance we were off some, but unless somebody did something to the ribs in the bottom of the canoe, that wouldn't lie.
No, it's definitely a massive fish, and you know, good on you for having put it back. And you know, that must have been just an incredible battle. I can't imagine. I've caught some big fish in my day, but nothing that big, at least in freshwater.
Well, it was something to remember. I'll tell you that for sure. It was a strong fish, and it was a great fight. And you know, I only had 8-pound test leader on, so I had to be somewhat gentle. But you know, we eventually got the fish in, and I had the ability to do that and take the pictures. And it's something today. Everywhere I go, every fishing show I go to, every time I talk to somebody about fishing, you know, it always comes up about the big fish. So it's lasted for a long time.
Awesome. All right, let's move up to today a little bit. A few fish later, and you tend to disappear from the the Maritimes area, or you know, Nova Scotia area anyway, when it starts to warm up here. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where you go and you know, why you go there. I mean, I'm sure you still experience some good fishing here, you know, on the mainland at some point. But tell us a little bit about what you what you're up to there.
Well, you know what, I am a fortunate guy, David, in that you know, I get to fish in some really neat places. So come the end of May, around the 26th, 27th of May, I will strike off for Labrador. And last year, I didn't come home until the 5th or 6th of August. And so I was gone for a little over 2 months. And then I was only home for 3 weeks, and I went back to Labrador again. And you know, I choose to go to Newfoundland and Labrador because really, you know, my game is Atlantic salmon fishing. It's what I like the best. We own some fishing lodges in Labrador, which certainly require my attention. And as far as Atlantic salmon fishing is concerned, you know, Newfoundland and Labrador, you know, they've got 60% of all the Atlantic salmon rivers in North America are in Newfoundland and Labrador. And I would say that more than 60% of the remaining fish are in Newfoundland and Labrador. And so, you know what, I like to be where I like to be where the action is. I like to be where we have the best availability of places to fish and fish that are there.
Right on. Yeah, because you especially, I'm sure, have seen the incredible decline in the salmon and our salmon rivers in Nova Scotia, especially the southern part. What are things still in really good shape in Newfoundland and Labrador in that respect, or are they starting to experience similar things?
Well, you know, Dave, excuse me, it has now been, this summer when I head to Newfoundland, it'll be 42 summers that I've been going. All right, so that just means I'm old as dirt. But I've got a tremendous amount of experience in going to Newfoundland and Labrador, and I would say that, you know, for the most part, although there's a lot changed about Newfoundland and Labrador and, you know, people moving away and the size of communities shrinking and stuff like that, for the most part, I would say that the fishing now is relatively unchanged from when I started. You know, it went through a period there where for years the fishing in Newfoundland had really declined, at least in the areas that I went to, and that had a lot to do with the commercial salmon fishery. It had to do with cod traps being set in the wrong places. But you know, once they got rid of all those and that commercial fishery was ended, you know, it was a resurgence. And I would have to say that, you know what, and happy to say that, you know, it's you can still have really good fishing over there in Newfoundland and Labrador for sure.
Awesome. So in the show notes to this episode, I'll put some links to, you know, where people can find out more about you, go to your website. You've got a book that you wrote a number of years ago as well. Just maybe summarize that real quick.
Okay, well, I did. I wrote a book called River Talk, and really it was a story, a 150-page story of the first several thousand Atlantic salmon that I ever landed. And I kept a log. I logged every fish, every fly, and that was up till number 2000. Since then, I've kind of stopped doing that because I'd spend more time writing than I would fishing, fortunately. But in any case, so I told a story of, you know, how I started and the people that I'd met and the lessons that I learned. It wasn't a book about how-to, although there is certainly a fair bit of how-to interspersed in the book, because as I met new people and learned lessons from them, I told that story as part of it. So, you know, it's an easy read, and it's a lot of fun. There's some great stories and a lot of great pictures, and it's been a very humbling experience because I wrote the book not to make money. I wanted to tell a story, and I spent a lot of my own money, you know, building the book, and now I've been in a position where I sold enough books to recoup the money, and now when I sell books, I just take the money and donate it to organizations like the Atlantic Salmon Federation, that do good things for the cause of conservation.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a great book. The pictures alone are well worth the price tag. And I think those are the main points that I wanted to touch on today. We could talk definitely a lot about other things. In fact, I may very well get you back on the show to talk about some other activities you do. I know, when you're not fishing or in the off season, it's not uncommon for me to hear that, you know, you've been out digging clams or, you know.
I'm headed there next after you and I get off the phone.
Are you really?
Yeah. I am. That's where I'm headed this afternoon. Yeah, it's warmed up and the tide is going to be low. So I'm going for my first clam digging shot of the year. And this morning I was boiling maple syrup. So there you go.
There you go. You are a pretty unique individual. Always great, always great talking with you, Mike. I'll definitely include some links in the show notes. Real quick, the lodges that you do have that you're a part of in Labrador, can you list those off and maybe just give a quick little synopsis on what each one is specializing in?
Sure, Ken. Look, we're fortunate to have three lodges in Labrador. One of them is called Crooks Lake Lodge. And it is a trout fishing lodge, wonderful fishery, big brook trout and pike. You go to crookslakelodge.com, you'll find that. We have two salmon lodges, one in a place called Hawk River, one in a place called Flowers River. The Hawk River starts earlier. It's in the more southerly part of Labrador. So we really start fishing there the last week of June and fish up until the first week of August. And then the Flowers River is the most northerly of all the salmon rivers in Labrador. And so because it's northerly, the fish get there later. And we actually start there mid-July and run into September with those. Each lodge has uniqueness to it. And each of them is you know, suited for different types of individuals. So my advice would be, you know, take a look at the websites, take a look at the information, and then When you want to know which lodge or location will be best suited for you, give me a call, and I'd be happy to run through what each lodge is, because it would take more time than you and I have here today.
Sure, gotcha. All right, well, I appreciate that info. Always good connecting with you, and we'll definitely have to try and get you back on the show.
Dave, I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was Mike Crosby again joining us today. Fantastic angler, great friend of mine. And as you heard, very likely did catch and release a North American record Atlantic salmon, if not a world record, back in 1988 on the Restigouche River in New Brunswick here in Canada. Estimated to be somewhere between 60 and 83 pounds. Based on the pictures and the eyewitness accounts. If you want to learn more about that fish, that story, Mike, his fishing book, the lodges that he operates in Newfoundland and Labrador, by all means, please check out the podcast episode show notes, which can be found at maritimeoutdoorsman.com/015. That's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, tight lines.